I've come across a lot of women at work who have it all figured out, but at home, you know, it's not necessarily the case. There is a lot of stigma around telling people that you are cluttered or disorganized. I think it's a signal for me that we need to make some changes in our life and address it, really. Hoarding is really a mental condition, and, you know, it does affect 2 to 5% of the population. We have to face the stuff and this discomfort and trying to understand what it is telling us. Take a step back and look at the benefits that you're going to get by having a more organized and tidy space. You're the expert in your life. I'm the expert in organizing. And it's only that together we can create systems that you're going to be able to maintain. I see so many people who don't want to start because they're just waiting for the perfect time. Yeah. And it never comes. If you're not ready, you know, it's going to be too forceful, too painful, and it's not certainly the right time to do that.
Hello, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating your 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Amanda and Jasmine, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead.
Natalie Ricote is a home and life organization coach, the founder of Get Organized and Beyond, and an advocate for intentional living. She's passionate about empowering neurodiverse women who feel overwhelmed by clutter or struggle with daily life reclaim their space, time, and mental clarity. She's dedicated to helping her clients develop personalized and sustainable organizing systems and habits that align with their unique needs and neurodiverse strengths. Based in Singapore since 1998, Natalie combines her professional expertise with her personal journey to provide compassionate and effective coaching. So here at the 40s Formula, we talk a lot about self-improvement and wellness and health, but we've never actually addressed something that I know for me personally is a huge stumbling block to feeling like I live an optimized life, and that is organization and clutter. Natalie, we are so happy to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
First thing I thought of when I thought about, you know, again, my personal struggles with organization is a quote that I'm telling clients all the time, which is how you do anything is how you do everything. Do you think that that tenet applies to home organization?
There's certainly some truth in it. I guess, you know, the outer environment can be the reflect of our inner state. In particular, you know, if you suffer from depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's kind of probably going to translate in clutter. Not always, but it certainly can. There is also the case of neurodiversity. People who suffer from OCD, ADHD, autism, they do face executive functioning challenges, which make it difficult for them to plan, to prioritize, to make decisions. And then it's going to, you know, translate also into clutter. It's nothing wrong with them. It's just the way the brain is wired, right? But sometimes clutter is just, you know, the result of a lack of organizing skills. We haven't necessarily been taught by our parents or by our schools about getting organized, and then again it results in clutter. Sometimes it's just situational, you know, life happens.
Yes, I would like to claim mine is situational. We'll see.
Yes, so it can be a new baby, it can be the death of a loved one, it can be a new job or just a big project at work. Or it could be COVID and being stuck out of a sudden at home. And even for the most organized person, it can, you know, translate into organizing challenges for a while. And then there is also, you know, we all have different priorities. I've come across a lot of women at work who have it all figured out. But at home, you know, it's not necessarily the case. And they don't really mind. And I think that's okay. We're all different, right? Yeah. I think it's only when it starts affecting, you know, your relationships in particular, that maybe you need to do something about it. But I think, you know, wherever the clutter comes from, I think we shouldn't be looking at it from a place of shame. And there is a lot of stigma around, you know, telling people that you are cluttered or disorganized. I think it's a signal for me that we need to make some changes in our life and address it, really.
I had a client who really struggled with emotional eating because she was struggling with the state of her home. She said that the laundry was just getting out of control. She couldn't keep up with the housework. Everything was just everywhere. And then that led her to binge on biscuits, chocolates, things that she shouldn't really be eating. And I remember when we put in a plan to focus on how she could address her home, it really helped her manage her eating habits as well. Do you find that people have this interaction between how cluttered their environment is to how cluttered their brain or maybe even their habits are as well?
Yeah, completely. I mean, you know, the case that you're mentioning, I've seen it many, many times, you know, a cluttered kitchen and you cannot really prepare food there. And even if you do, maybe the family doesn't eat together because, you know, there is no schedule. And then you end up by even, you know, relying on takeaway food. Food or delivery, and you know that it's, you know, loaded with fat and sugar more than if you were cooking at home, and definitely that can impact our habits, our daily habits.
What are the main issues? So thinking about women in their 40s specifically, so women in midlife, right? I think a theme that comes up for us a lot here on the 40s formula is women in this age group, we are often overwhelmed, right? We're working full time. A lot of us are mothers. A lot of us are caregiving to elderly parents. Yeah. A lot going on, right?
Sure.
So why are we holding on to stuff, right? Why at this age, when I think overwhelm is a bigger issue than not having enough to do, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Why are we holding on to that stuff and accumulating so much?
Yeah. It's true. We have so many things to juggle, and you know, you would think that by minimizing what you own, it will make your life easier. That's for sure. But the reality as human being, and especially as women in our 40s, we have accumulated a lot of experiences and we impart meaning to our stuff. So whether it's, you know, some hopes for the future, maybe some memories, maybe some fears even, when we have to detach from the stuff, of course, it brings a lot of emotional issues and it's difficult. There are, you know, many reasons why we tend to hold on to our things. The first one being sentimental, you know, things that have been gifted to us or things that we have inherited from a loved one. So it's, you know, there are a lot of memories attached and we feel that if we let go, we're going to lose the memory or there's going to be more distance, you know, with the person or the event, you know, in which we acquire this item. There is also the aspirational reasons, you know, we hope to live that type of life, to be that type of person, but reality is not necessarily, you know, representing that. I know many ladies who, you know, would like to be a great cook, to provide, you know, healthy dinner every day, cook from scratch on the table, and they are working, you know, 12 hours a day. But yet they're going to accumulate all the kitchen gadgets that you can possibly think, you know, because you think that that's the person you want to be. And if you let go of them, then that's, you know, prevent you from being that person.
I think it must be the same with clothes as well. Yes. I'm hanging on to clothes in my closet that I was like, I will fit into those one day.
Yes. Yeah.
That one day hasn't come yet.
Yes.
I don't know what to do. Like, how can I get rid of the stuff? Do you just say, just do it? You know, just close your eyes and just chuck it all away. Like, what steps are there in having a clear out of things that you no longer use, no longer need? Yeah. What can we do?
No longer serving you.
You know, something right? Like, exactly, no longer serving you.
Yeah. So many ladies can relate to the wardrobe, you know, issues for sure. My philosophy when it comes to clutter is that we have to take the time. We have to face the stuff and the discomfort it might bring, we have to understand why we are holding on to it. We talk about, you know, the sentimental clutter, the aspirational clutter, and there are other, you know, type of clutter. But we have to face the stuff and this discomfort and trying to understand what it is telling us. Because unless we face this, unless we are able to start rewriting the narrative behind the stuff, then the clutter is going to come back. My approach, and that's where for people, I deal with a lot of people who really struggle to let go. The level of attachment, it's very strong. And of course, by being by their side, I can provide this emotional support and, you know, but most importantly, to help them voice out those stories. Mm-hmm. And quite often when you voice out the stories, you realize, well, actually, it doesn't need to be this way. So for me, instead of rushing and pushing yourself to make decision that you might regret in the future, that's going to create a terrible, you know, experience, then it's better to take your time and confront, you know, the stuff and be able to rewrite the stories behind it.
Can you tell us a story of a client that you had, so basically that was really struggling to let go? Like what, like was it the sentimental thing or was it the aspirational thing and how you got them past it? Because I do feel like we all can maybe identify or see ourselves in one of those categories.
Right.
But then when we think about actually doing it, there's a block.
Yes.
So what do you do in person that makes that hurdle easier to jump?
It's interesting because I quite actually often hold my client back. Oh. They kind of feel pressurized that by having an outsider, I'm going to be judging them by how much they let go of.
Yes.
But for me, that's not a successful decluttering. I mean, for me, it's by my client to feel 150% confident they're making the right decision, that they are ready to let go. Because as I said, if there is some hesitation, then you're going to regret it, you know, down the road. And, you know, clutter is going to keep entering your life and you're going to have to repeat the process. So for me, it's about really telling them you have to be 150% confident about what you're going to let go of. And I think there is a right time to let go of things. And then that's remove, you know, the pressure. And then you start confronting the stuff. And of course, you know, the cortisol level at first are going to be very high. But over time, it's going to, you know, it's going to come down. And I did have a client with a very strong attachment to the belonging, especially the children belongings. Mm. She had missed a period of children life for, I think, a few months or years. And, you know, a decade later, she just couldn't part with those items because that was, you know, a memory of that time that she had missed. So again, you know, and she, interestingly, she wanted to start with those very emotionally driven items. I typically advise my client to start in categories where we don't have a strong attachment to, but she really wanted to start there. And so it was, you know, really taking her at her own speed. And then we started with the clothes and took the clothes out. And then, you know, we say, we're just going to have a look at, you know, what's in there. And then she realized, well, there were clothes that were damaged. You know, so definitely didn't elicit very, you know, positive memories. So she was able to let go of a little bit of this. And I think we left it there, you know, the first session. Then we went back to it and we kind of thought about what could we be doing with those clothes? And we came up with the idea of making a quilt out of some of the baby clothes. And there were two ladies. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of their company, but they did an amazing job in putting together a quilt that she could put on a bed and then enjoy every single day without having tons of clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she sees it. You know, it's actually out there. It's not in a box somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. She sees it. She enjoys it. And there was, you know, another category of clothes that was really the one that she was most attached to, that she kept in a memory box. Mm. I mean, in honesty, we started with several memory box. But, yes. You know, for me, it's really an iterative process. And that's how she got there. Mm. So I think it's about, you know, The fear about decluttering, of letting go, is actually more to do with the thought of decluttering. But when you get to do it, you know, you are going to quiet the fear and you're going to be able to make those baby steps if it has to be. You know, the idea is to end up with less than where you started. Yeah. It doesn't have to be 80% of what you own.
How do you know when the time is right to declutter?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly have to be, you know, ready for it. Typically, people come to me when they have tried many times on their own. Sometimes they have received judgment from family, you know, why would you need this type of help? You should be able to do it. But deep down, it's just a feeling of overwhelm. There is, you know, they just can't manage. It just takes a toll on their life. And I think most importantly, you know, it's the feeling of overwhelm, of guilt, of shame, the self-esteem or the relationship with a loved one that, you know, drive them to take action. I think for me, it's very important they are ready, because if you're not ready, you know, it's going to be too forceful, too painful, and it's not certainly the right time to do that.
Amanda, I feel the older we get, the more important protein is. But the thing is, not many women are eating enough.
Absolutely. And you know, protein isn't just for muscles. It helps with hormones, metabolism, staying full longer. And don't just guess, make quality protein a priority.
And that's why we trust the Meat Club. They deliver ethically sourced meats directly to you. You can get grass-fed beef, organic chicken, wild-caught seafood that is nutrient dense and packed full of the good stuff.
And here's the fun part. We want to see what you're cooking. Show us your creations and tag at the 40s formula and at the Meat Club SG so that you have a chance to win $250 in the Meat Club goodies.
Entries will close on the 5th of June and the winner will be announced on the first episode of season 6. So come on guys, get cooking. And if you haven't already used the Meat Club, you can. And you can save yourself $12 off by using code TFF12.
Head over to themeatclub.com.sg, get cooking, and who knows, you could even get $250 off your next shop.
Can I give you a real life example?
Sure, please.
Of an anonymous couple, let's call them the Blims. So the wife, no problem decluttering, would throw away everything in the house, does not have sentimental attachments, pretty okay with it. The husband, despite expressing sentiments to this degree, struggles to throw away, for example, old medical textbooks, you know, where like, you know, it's three editions later, you know, like that information isn't even relevant anymore, right? But no, I need that because I had that when I was in medical school. You know, that was a seminal textbook for me. How do you work with couples where, you know, or families, let's say, or, you know, whatever partnerships, whereby there is a difference of opinion on what needs to go and what needs to stay?
It's, I have to say, you're not the only one.
Yeah. I think again, it's not me. This is our hypothetical person. Situation. Yes, yes.
Sorry. Yes, I've assumed.
Just in case my husband's listening. Go on.
I see a lot of families where one side is kind of, you know, needs order and is ready to declutter and to let go. And the other person, let's put it nicely, you know, doesn't see it as a problem. That's definitely a challenge. I think I always advise my client to start with your own space. You have to come clear. You have to lead by example. You have to do a clear out of your own space. And sometimes you have to close your eyes on their own spaces as well.
So hard.
I understand that. But I think when it comes to, you know, shared spaces, that's where the main challenges can be. We tend to focus too much on the stuff, on the clutter, and be nagging the people around it. I always suggest to, you know, take a step back and look at the benefits that you're going to, you know, going to get by having, you know, a more organized and tidy space. I remember a few years ago, I had a Singaporean lady. She was living in the U.S. with her husband and children, and she asked my help for a mom here, and the mom was accumulating a lot of things and has been using the daughter's room, you know, as a storage room. And as a result, when the daughter was visiting, she couldn't, you know, stay with the mom, or it was very crowded and not really very nice. So the daughter, you know, kept telling the mom to declutter and, you know, talking about how you know, it was difficult. If you don't declutter, your daughter is not able to come. You're not going to enjoy your children, you know, presence as much as you would like to. Then that's kind of got her started. And so it's about, yeah, looking at what are the benefits for everyone. But of course, you know, sometimes you're going to have to make also some common ground. Yeah, that's the reality of, you know, of things.
So that example you've just used, would you say that the mum was holding on to and accumulating things because her daughter had gone and it was almost like a replacement? Do you think that might have been the situation, or am I just looking too much into it?
No, I mean, it might have been. Yeah. I can't answer that question for sure. If I remember, the mum was a teacher and in the past, and you know how they tend to accumulate a lot of books, a lot of paper in particular, and there was a lot of that. So was she compensating? It might well have been, but I'm not sure. I think it was more... I don't like using the word hoarding, but yeah, cluttering tendencies for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was going to say, and was that a success story? Like, did the mom hear that message of, you know, your daughter can't visit here if this room doesn't get cleaned
up? Yeah, it was amazing, you know, that she, it was really baby steps, but she was willing to try, and she really put some efforts into it. Yeah.
Do you find that you have people, women, who want to declutter and they'll go through a phase like maybe once every few months of getting rid of the crap, but it builds up again and then they're back at square one. How can you motivate or help women change those habits so it doesn't get to a point where everything piles on and then they have to start again at square one again, rather than, you know, keeping it, I guess, steady all the way through?
Yeah. First of all, we have to accept that clutter didn't accumulate overnight, and it's not going to disappear overnight either. Yeah. I think for me, you have to look at it, you know, as a journey. And to start somewhere and, you know, to build progressively onto it, rather than doing a big decluttering exercise and just leaving it there. But I think there is a lot of part, you know, if you really want to stay clutter-free, of course, you need to start decluttering, but you also need to put in place organizing systems. Those systems, you know, they're going to have to rely on habits. And then it's a question of practicing them so that you can prevent the clutter from coming back. And another thing is to try to limit as well as much you bring in so that you don't, you know, keep adding to the clutter. Of course, it's easier said than done. It can be quite helpful as well. But I mean, habits, you know, can be, I mean, starting with organizing story could be to find a home to every items that you own. And the habit will be to put the item back to the place where it belongs to. And, you know, if you try to do that, instead of putting things down, to put them away right away, and if it's possible, if you have find a home for all your belongings, then, you know, it's going to prevent pile of stuff accumulating and later on to have to go back to it. So those small little, you know, habits, it's going to make the difference into the buildup.
Yeah, I am so glad that you brought up systems, because this is, you know, as a coach, obviously that's how I coach changing your lifestyle for health, right? Yeah. Is like you have to build an environment of systems that you can execute on repeat. It's all great and well if you can follow a meal plan for a week or something, right? But but when you travel, then what?
Yeah.
You know, like you've lost your system. So I love the idea of systems. I remember when I did hire a home organizer, this is years ago, this would have been 2012. I was single.
Oh, that was years ago.
So, this is, we're talking a long time ago, and I was single, so different challenges, let's put it this way. But I remember one of the lasting things I will never forget that she helped me with is setting up a system in the kitchen that flowed with what my morning routine was.
Yes.
Right? So I would lose time. One of my concerns back then was like getting out of the house quickly, because I used to leave for work at 4:30 in the morning. So like I was like, I need to like get out, you know? And she was like, what do you need to do before you leave the house? I was like, I need to make coffee and eat breakfast. So we set up a coffee station where my mug was there. Like my mug was right above my coffee. And I know that seems really obvious, right? But previously my coffee maker was on one side of the kitchen. My mugs were over here. And she's like, move your mugs over there, even if they're separate from all the other glasses, you know, because you're not looking for other glasses, you're looking for mugs. So put them next to your coffee machine, because that was where the plug was, so I couldn't really. Yeah. And, you know, and then put your coffee that you're going to brew, put it in the filter the night before. So that instead of getting it out, opening it, portioning, you just push the button. She's like, set up the systems the night before that then make that easier, right? Yeah. I tell you all of this to say that I think there's a huge difference between the ability to declutter and the ability to set up systems.
Yes.
And I think that second one is more challenging.
It depends. Yeah. Actually, everybody is different. Mm. But I think when I look at organizing, sometimes people try to put system in place, but are too complicated. Mm. So you really have to put system in place with the minimum number of steps to complete, so that things can be done repetitively, as you said.
Make it easy.
Exactly. Yeah, I was actually very recently working with a client, and she was organizing a chest up drawer with personal items in there. And in there was the jewelry box. And she was telling me, whatever I do, you know, when I come back from work or an event at night, I remove my jewelry and it will stay on top of the dresser. And we look a bit, you know, deeper what was happening. Turned out that she had the jewelry box inside the drawer. So every time she needed to access or put away the jewelry, she had to open the drawer, take the box out, open the lid of the jewelry box, take or put away the item, close the lid, put it back in the drawer, close the drawer. Obviously, when you come back from work and you're tired, this is not going to happen.
Not gonna work.
So the idea was just actually to remove the lid from the jewelry box. So but just by doing that, she just had to open the drawer, put the things in, and close the drawer. Three steps instead of seven or nine, you know.
Genius.
And then it was the jewelry went back in. So we really, when we talk about organizing system, we have to make things, you know, simple. That's going to help us based on our lifestyle, as you say, based on your needs, based on your habits as well. Yeah. So that, you know, it just flows naturally.
And again, maybe thinking outside the box, like, pop the lid off that jewelry box. Like that's not impossible, but she may have never seen that solution because she was so thinking about, this is my jewelry box and it's in this drawer. You know, it's like, I think that's why having another set of eyes in anything that you're trying to improve, get a pro to look at you for a while, because they will see things that you don't see.
Yeah, for sure, you know? Yes, for sure.
How did you get into this line of work, Natalie? How was this? How did this become a job, a career for you?
It's been a professional job for close to 12 years now, but it's actually a passion that started as a child. I think actually looking back, I think it was a calling. It's a calling to me. But it started as a child. I was raised in a kind of disorganized environment. My father tended to accumulate everything that would come his way. He had been born during the Second World War, a lot of privation. And of course, you know, he was keeping everything. Yeah. And my mom was a very last minute person, you know, around 8 p.m., although she was, you know, a housewife. She would wonder what to put, you know, on the table for dinner. And I mean, as a child, I needed the structure and order. And then I started to kind of implement some systems at home to have little corner organized. And I loved it so much that when I was actually invited to my friends for some play date, I was quite often ending up helping the parents to tidy a little corner.
Wow.
And
I loved it.
I needed you as a kid to be friends with my kids.
I often hear, you know, oh yeah, I would have loved that. I think 25 years or so later, when I became a mother, I was traveling very extensively for my work at that point. And when my son was born, I decided to set up some routines at home so that things could run smoothly when I was not around. And actually, I realized that it was, you know, beyond efficiency, it was a question of just sanity, you know, my peace of mind when I was away and the relationship, you know, with my husband and the family of keeping things under control. And I was my friend, you know, struggling, you know, with trying to manage life demands. So, yeah, for me, I understood at that point really the importance of routine in terms of, you know, keeping a family happy. I also learned along the years that less is truly more. I've always been organized, but certainly there was a time in my life when I had much more than I needed or that I own today. And the big haha moment for me was when my son was around 6 years old, because up to that point, I had kept all his belongings, hoping for a second child. One day I knew I had to face the music and that I had to let go of the things, let go of my hope for the future. And it was scary. But at the same time, I mean, I find it was so liberating, because instead of always focusing about what I didn't have, a bigger family, I could focus on my little family and pour more time, energy and love into it. And for me, that's really changed my mindset towards our belonging. And I think since then, I've been trying my best to be intentional about what I keep and what I bring into my life. And I think that's all those experiences that, you know, the peace of mind that has given me the sense of control also, that has, you know, wanting me to pass that on to other people, in particular women, and help them. And that's how my company was, you know, was created. 12 years ago now.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
And you said, you know, women are the probably main customers, you know, that you see.
Yes.
And I know that you specialize in neurodivergent women, which I think is really interesting. We had a guest on here earlier this season talking about, you know, working with ADHD women and kind of some of the ways that she works with them in a psychological sense. What are some of the ways that you work with neurodiverse women to use kind of home organization and decluttering as a tool to help them?
Well, it's interesting because when I started, I didn't really think at all about neurodivergent individuals, but I think my philosophy and approach resonated with them, because since the beginning for me, it's been clear the client needs to be involved in the process. I'm not the kind of organizer who go to people's home and gonna fix the problem. It's kind of a partnership. You're the expert in your life, I'm the expert in organizing, and it's only that together we can create systems that you're going to be able to maintain. And if we want that to happen, they have to be based on you know, your lifestyle, your needs, your habits, but also, you know, on your way of thinking and operating. And that's, you know, we know how neurodivergent individual can really think outside the box. And this approach, I think, resonated with them. And I got more and more clients, you know, especially with ADHD, autism, and OCD. But I mean, maybe to answer your questions more concretely, when I work with someone who is neurodivergent, I'm really gonna make sure that I break down the project in tiny little steps so that they can stay focus. So when we organize a space, typically we're going to start categorizing the items, then looking at each category and decluttering, and then we're going to organize. And sometimes for the neurotypical individual, we can do that, you know, concurrently. But for the neurodivergent, definitely these are steps that need to be done separately so that they can stay focused. And sometimes I kind of like to play games, you know, if the client is up to it, of giving them 15 minutes or 45 minutes when they're going to be, you know, categorizing the items so that they can stay focused. There is a lot about also providing accountability to this group of people. I run a clutter support group online for a small groups of women where we meet once a week for a period of 1 month, and everyone comes with their project or task, and then I'm going to give them some tips, but most importantly, they're going to get accountability before they show up next week, you know, what they want to do, and then they're going to get, you know, encouragement. And this is very powerful, again, for the ADHD community. And another things that I will do with them as well is also the body doubling. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just having someone by your side that's just there while the person is doing the things can be just enough to keep the person going. And I do that during my session with clients, but also I do that online. So again, group of people who come in and, you know, just for an hour, everyone will decide what they're going to work on and everybody goes their own way. But just knowing that there is someone next to them,
yeah,
it makes such a difference. So that's the kind of, you know, things I will use for my neurodivergent client. But really my approach is, you know, the baseline that I use with them is something that I use with all of my my clients, really.
So I've I saw this I think it was a meme, is that the right word, where it was like someone's like, right, I'm gonna go and organize everything, and then they take out everything from their closet, chuck it on the floor, and then it's like, oh crap, this is too overwhelming, I can't do it.
Yes.
Do you find that people get into that situation and then it's like, it just makes more of a mess and they can't get back into doing it? Is that when you would use the little sort of little snippets to sort of get them to help organize their closet or whatever it is that they're trying to organize?
Yes, completely. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, I give a talk or, you know, and people say, oh, I'm so inspired. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it all now.
Yeah.
And I have to warn them to be very careful about that. And it's quite often, you know, you take the stuff out, you might start dealing with it, but, you know, it's you reach a point where you have so much stuff to confront, you reach decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. And as you said, either you're gonna stop and push things along the way, and that's, you know, the situation you're sharing, or in some cases people can actually push forward and then regret decision, you know, further down. When I work with a client, I work for typically 3 hours, and one of my role is really to observe how they're dealing, and I'm always very careful. Even if they say we want to reorganize the whole wardrobe, I'm going to start with, you know, maybe the clothes that are hanging, or maybe even if it's a big collection, I might even take a category and see how they're going through the process. And everyone is different. Some people are extremely decisive and they go so fast, but some need the time to process. And for me, it's important that I respect, you know, the speed they need to go. So that's my role, to make sure that they can deal with the amount of stuff that we are taking out, that we process them, and then that we put them back in a more organized way. I can't leave a client with, you know, stuff on the floor. But yeah, that's very difficult sometimes to manage on your own. And for me, it's better to actually do it by, you know, even 15 minutes a day or half an hour provide more success, and, you know, being able to stay focused. So you need to be, you know, to really say, maybe I'm going to start with a drawer, or, you know, looking at how much time you can focus on that. I always tell my clients, try to end on a positive note. Mm-hmm. You know, try to stop before you get bored, because then if you stop on a high, you're going to want to go back and do it again. Yeah. And so I think it's better to do that, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, a day, or, you know, 1 hour twice a week or something like that, whatever fits your schedule. Maybe even block the time in your diary so that you get a better chance of being done. And then, you know, doing that on a regular basis, and also rewarding yourself, you know, in the process.
Yes. Always about that.
Yeah, because quite often we wait, you know, to have achieved, you know, the final outcome that we visualize. And so that sometimes, you know, it can take some time. And so try to reward yourself every time you've done what you're supposed to do. I had a client, she had engaged me many years ago to, she wanted to create a photo book for her son when he was graduating from high school, before he goes to uni, and she had 30,000 pictures on the computer,
wow,
on several devices actually. So we came up with a plan to do that. And she said that she will be doing that half an hour every night before dinner while her son was working, studying. And after that, she will go and get a glass of wine. So, I mean, I don't want to encourage drinking, yeah. But, you know,
it's not
whether
about the wine.
Yeah, you know,
it but could that's be neuroplasticity, isn't it? You yeah. reward yourself, then you want to go back to doing it yeah. again.
Exactly.
And then that habit's yes. going to get built.
Yes.
I wonder what would happen though once you completed it. It's like, what do I do with my time? How yeah. do I get my glass
how do
of
I
wine?
Get exactly? Yeah. It's yes. like the mouse, you know, getting yeah. the cheese. It's like I still want the cheese, but like how do I my yeah. experiment's over. So what do I do? But that's such a great, you know, breaking into small chunks. Again, yes. this is something that yes. I think anyone who's worked with habits or lifestyle changes, it's like it always is better something small and repeatable yes. than something grand scale and once.
On this, I want to talk a bit about perfectionism because especially as women, you know, we tend to think that it's all or nothing, you know, approach. So I see so many people who don't want to start because they just waiting for the perfect time yeah. and it never comes. Or they just, you know, want the perfect outcome. And we are influenced so much by Pinterest or Instagram where yeah. you see those pantries with the food decanted the in, you know, matching.
I've bought those spice not the racks, the spice bottles.
Oh, but to decant your spices into?
But I haven't done it yet.
Exactly. So, I mean, that looks beautiful. Or the wardrobe with, you know, color-coded. And, you know, I can understand the need to aspire to that. That might be actually preventing you from taking action. Mm-hmm. Again, it's about starting, establishing some things, learning out of it, you know, and then improving upon it. And sometimes, actually, you can achieve even much more than what you had anticipated, mm-hmm. you know. I went through it personally with, you know, with my books, which was something that was, for me, very difficult to let go of. But again, I started the process. I think it took me 5 years at the total to declutter my bookshelf. I went through several iterations, but at the end, now I don't keep any books and I sold the bookshelves. And if you had told me that was, you know, what I would, you know, achieve at the end, it would have been too scary. I would never have started. But by going, you know, through those progressive steps, I made it happen like this. Yes. And I've seen clients, you know, going through the same process as well. I had some clients who went down the minimalist life and who downsized, you know, from a very large home to an HDB flat. When the husband lost the job, they were so happy not to have that financial burden.
Well, that's something I actually wanted to talk to you about, right? Was like, I think, you know, we talked about when is it not the right time to declutter, right? You know, like when is it maybe too soon or too much or whatever. But are there certain unexpected transitions that actually do set the stage for the perfect time to declutter? So like a move might be one of those times, right?
Definitely.
My parents are doing that right now. They're actually moving from a condo to a house, which sounds like it would be the opposite direction, but really it's not. It's about the same, you know, size. So they're going through a decluttering process. My brother recently lost his wife. And so, you know, he's going through his sort of kind of emotional decluttering of her belongings and what to do with that side of the house and everything. Yes. Are there unexpected transitions like that where it's like it actually kicks you into gear and it's like, wait, now's the time?
There are definitely some times that are good, you know, catalyst to declutter. Some of them being planned for some people, some are unplanned. So yes, a move, downsizing also can be a reason. It can be a change in your family size. It can be arrival of a new baby. Yeah. A lot of women, you have this nesting instinct of making the space calm and organized, but it also can be when the child leave for uni. I went through this myself 3 years ago, kind of want to reclaim your space, but also most importantly to embrace, you know, a new chapter in your life. I mean, all of these are kind of planned, but sometimes you might have to sell your house and that people are going to declutter because they want to make, you know, their home look the best and get more money out of it. Sometimes it's when you have to spend more time at home, maybe because of retirement, maybe because of, you know, working from home. It could be when you get married as well, when you're going to merge two households.
Yeah, you realize you'll be two of everything. everything.
Yes, and you have to go through things, and then, you know, it's kind of almost a challenge to, you know, build a relationship building, you know, in selecting what you're going to keep and embrace this new life. Sometimes it can be also, you know, health issues, you know, allergies, respiratory problem, because, you know, a cluttered home is difficult to clean. You just go around things, and I've seen, you know, people who went into this because of health issues as well.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that last one, but that makes total sense.
Yeah,
you know, the accumulation of everything, including dust and allergens. Yes. Are there red flags? So again, I don't use the term hoarder either. I think it's really derogatory, and I don't love it. Are there red flags that you see in particular clients, or just that you've observed in, like, this is a tendency that down the line may result in having a home that is almost, you know, again, what I take from the hoarder experience, right, is that, like, the clutter is kind of affecting your relationships and health and stuff like that. So are there red flags where it's like, ooh, that person might be on the path, might be on the path. One that I always think of is collections.
Yes.
People who collect figurines and doodads, you know, I'm always like, that's like it's like a gateway to the hoarding. I don't know. What do you think?
Hoarding is really a mental condition, and, you know, it does affect 2-5% of the population.
That's quite a lot, actually.
Yeah,
it's quite a lot, yes. I mean, there is a task force, actually, that has been set up in Singapore to look into this this issue. It's a very complex, definitely, issue, but not everyone is, you know, fit into that category. But certainly I see people, you know, can have a very high level of clutter. And some signs that you might want to look into is, you know, people who start talking about moving to a bigger home start to, you know, consider putting things in self-storage boxes, you know, and it's just because of the accumulation of stuff. When you have a room that's not used for its intended purpose, such as, you know, the guest room that's used as a storeroom. I mean, a lot of people can relate to that. It can be, I see also people who claim they are organizing, but actually they're just moving the stuff from one place to the other in the home. Nothing will go out. They buy actually a lot of storage boxes to put the stuff in and think that, you know, it's contained, it's organized. So that's also kind of a sign. I think it's you know, when it affects the there is a lot of struggle, a lot of you know, arguments at home about the clutter. These are, you know, red flags that it might accumulate overnight. I think also our parents, you know, I think they used to pass their things to their children, but now today the children don't want, you know, their parents' things. And when I hear sometimes people saying, oh, I'm going to keep that for my children or my grandchildren, you know, it's unlikely they're going to be interested. And I'm not sure whether you heard about the concept of, you know, death cleaning.
Death cleaning?
Death cleaning. There's such a thing that's actually, there's a book that has been written about this concept. I think she's a Swedish lady. But basically, the idea is actually to take a good look at, you know, at your life and the legacy you want to leave behind, and to declutter before pass on, so that you're not a burden for your children.
Like,
I actually experienced that myself, because I lost both my parents very suddenly. And my father was the first one to pass 10 years ago. And he had left a garage full of, you know, 40 years of accumulation. And I find myself to that point to deal with the emotional loss, the grief. But I also had to help my mom, you know, declutter this garage. And it took me 3 summers, about, you know, up to a week decluttering and organizing. And it was so tough, because it was you know, things I had no idea, some junk, but it brings still a lot of emotion. And for me, I made myself the promise at that point. I never been cluttered, but I would really, you know, be mindful of what I keep, because I have only one child, and when I pass, I don't want to be, you know, to give him that burden, you know, of the stuff. Yeah, you have to be quite a self-aware. Sometimes we are not, and that's why we need to guide the discussion very carefully when you start recognizing those signs, you know, that we were talking about.
So when you talk about that in the health form, you know, like we don't want to be a burden on our kids because we want to be healthy up until we're not, and then basically, you know, don't need to be around, because I think what is the point of life if you can't do things for yourself? But I never thought about all the stuff that is a mental burden. And actually, our next guest, who we're going to be interviewing, she had to go through that at 29. Her father passed away when she was younger, her mother had a stroke, and she went through this phase, I think it was a whole year of decluttering what her mother had accumulated. And to think about that as a mental struggle, it's tough. It's a lot, isn't it?
Oh, it's
a lot.
So much. Yeah, I also had a girlfriend, lost both parents very suddenly as well, and then had to basically, you know, like she was still in the process of decluttering from the first parent's passing when the second one passed, you know, that kind of thing. And it was just, you know, and it's also very lonely. You know, can we talk about the fact that, like, when the person's not there, but you're around all their stuff, how almost ghostly that can feel, ghastly. Not sure if that's the right word. Yeah, there's just a lot in there.
Yeah, it's it's extremely tough situation for sure. So yeah, if we can do anything to anticipate that, I mean, sometimes, you know, in the case of unexpected loss, it's you're never prepared for that. But yeah, that's the reality. It's tough.
On that very high note, Natalie, we are coming to the end of our time, and I do want to ask you something that we ask every single guest sitting in this chair on the 40s Formula, which is, what is your 40s formula? What is the advice, you know, given your profession, that you can give to us women in our 40s to help us thrive through this decade?
I mean, obviously, it's going to have to be about letting go. I think for me, it's really about releasing what doesn't support our life at this point of time. So whether it's about decluttering our homes, but also, you know, really evaluating all our commitments as well, and being very intentional about what we keep and what we bring into our space and our lives. And then you can make use of that, you know, newfound time, energy, mental clarity to really, you know, pursue what brings you joy and meaning in your life.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Let go and make space.
Yes.
It sounds so appealing to all of us, I think. Yes. So thank you so much for being with us here on the 40s Formula. Natalie, you have given us so many great tips, and we really appreciate you coming.
Thank you. I really, it was a pleasure to be talking to the two of you.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s Formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s Formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s Formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community. And we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.